section that we are in right now, where we have been, is knowing God the Father through the experience or experiencing His grace. And we're looking at four different aspects of this particular part of it. The first part, we looked at the uniqueness of the experience, talking about the fact that the Israelites, these are the children that came out of Egypt in the Exodus. The parents have all perished in the wilderness, and these are now the children who are getting ready to go into the promised land 40 years after they've been wandering. And so they have a unique experience of all of the things that Moses is reminding them about, their experience in both the Exodus and then also there at Mount Sinai when God gave them the law. So we talked about that part of it, the uniqueness of it. And then we talked about the content of the experience. And we're focusing mainly, again, on those two events where Moses in Deuteronomy chapter 4 is reflecting back to this group of Israelites and reminding them of the experience they had in the redemption from Egypt, that is, in the Exodus experience, and then also the revelation of God at Sinai, and the fact that God didn't just give the Israelites the law there, but He established a relationship with them as His people and their God. So that is the content that we're really focusing on. This morning, we're going to try to look at the last two of these four parts of this, and we start out with looking at the transmission of the experience. In other words, there is a message of the experience, and that message has to get from the eyewitnesses to those who would follow in the generations to come. And so when we're talking about the transmission of the experience, that's what we're focused on. How do we get the message from those who actually experienced it to those who would come afterwards, who weren't there to experience it, but they need to know about it anyway? Moses instructed this group of people, again, those who had experienced it, Moses instructed them of the importance of passing these things down to their children and to the future generations. Turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 6. Let me get somebody to read for us verses 1 through 9. And then let me get somebody else to read verses 20 through 25. Deuteronomy 6, 1 through 9. Who wants to read that?
Find them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontal between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gate.
Okay. Let me get somebody to read 20 through 25. Who's got it?
When your sons ask you in time to come, saying, what is the meaning of the testimony, the statutes, and the judgments which the Lord our God has commanded you? Then you shall say to your son, we are slaves of Pharaoh in Egypt. I'm sorry. We were slaves of Pharaoh and Egypt, and the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand. And the Lord showed signs and wonders before our eyes, great and severe against Egypt, Pharaoh, and all his household. Then he brought us out from there, and that he might bring us in to give us the land which he swore to our fathers. And the Lord commanded us to observe all these statutes, to fear the Lord our God, for our good always, for he might preserve us alive, as he is this day. Then it will be righteousness for us, if we are careful to observe all these commandments before the Lord our God, as he has commanded us.
Okay. So, those who experienced the Exodus and the Mount Sinai event there are told of the significance and the importance of doing what? Pass these things on, okay? Go back and take a look at a couple of really key statements here. He says, let's see, verse... here it is. No, verse 2. That you may fear the Lord your God, you and your son and your son's son or your grandson. Okay? What is he saying there? Pass this on from one generation to the next. Make sure that you tell it to your son so they have it to tell it to their sons, you see, and so forth. Make sure it gets passed along. Now, how are you going to do this? Well, look at what he says here. Talk about them. This is verse 7. When you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise, you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. What's he trying to say here? Put them there all the time, so they are always being reminded of these events. See? What is the main point that he's trying to make here?
They have to be on the, in their hearts and in their souls every day.
Right. Right. So that they don't forget. See? So the future generations won't forget. Do everything you can. So that in those future generations, when they come along and they say, hey, why do we do this? Why do we do that? What's the meaning of these laws and decrees? What's the purpose of these things? And you tell them what? What do you tell him? What does he say? But specifically, what? Tell him what the Lord has done for them. Exactly. Go all the way back to that original event. We were slaves in Egypt, and God brought us out by a mighty hand. You say, you take them back. They can't experience that because they weren't there. But you can teach it to them. And you can keep it ever before them. You say. So that as your children are growing up and they ask, why do we do this? You take them back to that event and you show them and you tell them why. What's the purpose for this rule, for this law, for the why, the reason that we do these things? Because of what God had done for us back in Egypt. See? It is the transmission of that experience. Those who were not there cannot experience it. It's over. But they can have that experience transmitted to them in that way, by teaching them, telling them, making sure that they know not only what the experience was, but why it happened. Now, first century Christians experienced Jesus. Okay? And they passed their experience on to us. Okay? John chapter 20 and verse 30. John, at the end of his gospel, says, many other things did Jesus in the presence of his disciples that are not written in this book. Okay? So there's a whole lot of other stuff that Jesus did that's not recorded for us. He says, but these are written, why? That you might believe. You see? These are written that you might believe. They wrote those things down so that you, who's the you? Us. Anybody that's reading it. That we might believe. We weren't there. How many of you were at the cross of Jesus? Okay? None of us. But you see, in the same way that Moses instructed the Israelites to do with their children, the apostles did for us. Okay? And it has been passed on from generation to generation. And that experience needs to continue to be transmitted to the future generations. Matthew chapter 28, verses 18 and 20, or 18 through 20. What does he say there? Go into all the world and do what? And teach. Teach what? Okay, teach the gospel. And do what? Make disciples is what he said. Go into all the world and make disciples. Okay, how are you going to do that? By teaching them to obey everything I have commanded you. Right? Okay, so that way when someone today says, what's the meaning of this? Why do you do this? Why do you do that? Exactly. Exactly. We pass it on just like Moses told the Israelites to do with their children. See? Same way. We pass it on. We have got to pass it on to our children because, as we've talked about many, many times, our children are the future of the church. Okay? They are the future of the church. If we don't pass it on, then it won't get passed on. It'll be forgotten. See? And so we have the responsibility, just like the Israelites of that generation have, the responsibility to pass on to our children, to write it on our gates and on our doorposts and to talk about it when we sit down and when we stand and in the morning and the evening to put it before them. Okay? When they ask us, why do we do this? Okay? We can go back and show them and tell them what the meaning and what the purpose of the things that we do are. Why do we have communion every first day of the week? Why? Because Jesus told us to do what? First day of the week we are to remember. Right? Whenever you do these things, you do what? You do this in memory of me. The Apostle Paul said that we celebrate that communion. When we celebrate it, we are celebrating what? We are remembering his death. For how long? Until he comes, thank you. You see? So how long do we have to keep passing this on from generation to generation? Until he comes. You see? Until he comes. You've got to keep passing it on. Now, I talked about this a while back in a lesson that we did. And again, just to emphasize the importance of this and the significance of making sure we pass it on. How many generations does it have to skip before it will be lost? Just one. Just one generation is all it has to skip. Okay? Just one. Okay? Absolutely, and that's what I was going to say. I think that the main reason why so many of our young people aren't continuing to be faithful is because the older ones are not passing it down. Well, we may be teaching them the information, see, but are we demonstrating it to them in our lives? See? Absolutely. Notice again what Moses tells the Israelite people here do. He says, just worship the Lord on the Sabbath and everything will be okay, right? Well, wait a minute. Why not? Isn't that enough? Just go to church on Sunday and everything will be okay? We don't think that's correct, is what I'm understanding you to say. Well, then why do we practice that? You see? Okay, I'm stepping on toes, okay? But I don't apologize. Because we do have to wake up, brethren. It's not going to happen by us just bringing our kids to church on Sundays. You see? What does he say? Go back to verse 7. Teach your children. You shall talk to them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way, when you lie down, when you rise, You shall bind them as a sign on your hand. They shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on your doorposts of your houses and on your gates. See? It's how you live your life is what he's trying to say. They've got to see it all the time. And if all they see is us, you know, coming to church on Sunday, and then we go on about our business the rest of the week, then what's the message that they're going to receive? As long as I go to church on Sunday, everything's okay. It doesn't really matter how I live the rest of the week. Okay, I got a lot of hands up. Steve, then Judy, then Baron, then Ray. All right? Y'all remember that order because I won't. Exactly. The church can never take the place of what the home, what should be going on in the home. At the very best, I mean, think about it, folks. At the best, what do we have, 3 hours a week?
Maybe four.
If you come every time, okay? Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, it's 3 hours. And you don't even get a whole hour. Okay? Because, you know, we got to have that transition time. Okay, we stop the Bible class, and then we got to visit and do all that stuff. So we only get 45 minutes. If everybody's here on time, I'm not even going to go there. Okay. All right. Okay. Do I need to say any more about this? Yeah, ouch. Okay. Bible class is supposed to start at 9:30. Okay. What time do you get to your job? It's supposed to start at 8 o'clock. What time do you get there? You got there at 8:10 or 10 minutes after your job where you were supposed to be there every day. How long do you think your boss would put up with that? You see what I'm saying? It's a matter of our priorities and what's important to us. And what are we showing and teaching to our children when it's more important that they get to school on time than it is that they get to Bible class on time or that they're even here? You say, what are we teaching them?
No, it's not so much that we're doing one thing on Sunday and we're ignoring it Monday through Saturday. It's where you put the emphasis on saying it. It's not that we're going out and being terrible people, you know, and our kids are seeing us do awful things. They just know that, okay, Sunday is the church day and maybe a little more here and there and the rest of the time we'll do what I want.
Judy, I think you were next. We're going to come to that part here in a minute.
Because that brings it even a little closer to home. And then make what you learn and what you're teaching your children the lifestyle of the family. Right? So they know and why we honor Christ, why we do the things we do at all times. Because believe me, people will, as they're coming into your home and see them, they will ask you why you do the things. Why you say the things you say, and you know why you against certain things, and then be ready to have that answer for why you do the things that you
say. Absolutely, it's got to be consistency. They've got to be able to see that what we talk about and pray about and so forth on Sundays is what we're living in our homes and everywhere else throughout the week. If it's not consistent, then it sends a confusing message back and forth.
And you know, as this becomes your lifestyle, you begin to feel more and more like an alien as well. And these guys, because I feel like we're the minority because of how we look at things and the way we feel about things compared to the way the world is going.
Yes, he's my former brother, son-in-law, rather. I don't know if they're legally divorced yet or not, but anyway, Steve, those of you who know my, one time after, you know, Katie and he first got married, and we're talking about things over, he had commented. He was raised up in going to church as a kid, and I think the Methodist church. I don't remember for sure. It doesn't really matter. But he was just astounded as he saw us in our family, and he said, I didn't think that people actually really tried to live that way in their lives. You know, I mean, he knows all kinds of things of what the Bible teaches, but I didn't realize that people really took that seriously and tried to live that way. So I took that as a great compliment because he saw that in us. In spite of all the things that are going on, my son-in-law, Steve, I'm going to keep calling him my son-in-law. Okay? I don't care what they did. He is still searching out for the Lord, and he's striving to find a relationship with God. So I ask you to just keep praying for him. Okay? Have a Christmas present for him, giving him a copy of Not a Fan. He is searching. But anyway, Baron. Take a stand. You got to know it. You mentioned Phil Robertson, by the way. I sent an email to Cracker Barrel, which is one of my favorite places to eat. I sent him an email yesterday saying I will no longer be frequenting their establishment until they change their position. They decided to take their Duck Dynasty stuff out and get rid of it and stop selling it. Hey, you know what? That's your choice, but it's my choice as to who gets my money. So I'm not, I am not at Cracker Barrel restaurants. And I told them, I thought they were, you know, morally upstanding, family-oriented place, but apparently they chose to side with the gay and lesbian community on this, and so they won't get any more of my money. I won't charge extra for that, by the way. That's anyway, go ahead. Yeah. Exactly what I mean. Hold back. Ray, you had a comment?
I had a few meetings about that with my wife and I meeting of course with our children. Kind of on a group of people, but we kind of got away from it. And we used to have prayer time and using scriptures. But it goes back to the home. We have to, I mean, it's just like when you send your children to school. You can't expect the children to teach to raise your children. Everything starts at home, in the house. And all that responsibility is laid on the parents. It's our responsibility to raise our children, bring them to church. And I have to agree with one other thing you said. Children have to develop their own sense of their own religion when it comes to obeying God. But I'm going to tell you, the older I get, I'm very serious about it because I know I'm going to live here forever. But I try to push my children. You need to, do what you need to do. I mean, the things are not always going to work the way you want to work. You can't blame it on God.
That's right.
You know, some of the things we do is our own fault and of our own doing.
Exactly. Sometimes they have to wallow in the pig pen before they come to their senses. That's what Cindy and I keep praying about for our daughter, that she will come to the point where she will no longer be content to wallow in the pig pen, and she'll come to her senses. Yeah. There will be civil war in this country before that takes effect. I promise you that, because people in the military will not stand for that. So, yeah. And I don't think they ever will. I think that's a lot of, you know. Anyway, let's move on here. There are three ways that we can experience or transmit rather the experience. Okay, that we need to be aware of. The first one is through the scriptures. It's the eyewitness accounts. It's reading what they have written, what they have passed on in the written word to tell us of the events that took place. If you go back over to Deuteronomy, look in chapter 31, verses 9 through 13. If I can get somebody to read those for us, verses 9 through 13. Lynette? And that their children who have not known it. Okay. How are they going to know it? They hear it. You've got to pass it on. So it's through that reading of the word. Okay. The second method is by telling our story. Okay. You mentioned that a moment ago, Judy. It is entering into the story of the Bible through our own experiences. Okay? We weren't there at the cross of Christ to witness with our eyes the crucifixion and what Jesus did. We weren't there at the Lord's Supper. But we can tell our story as to what the crucifixion and the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus has done for us in our lives. We experience that, you see, when a person dies to themselves, you see, and is buried with Christ in baptism, they are experiencing a very similar kind. In fact, it is the reality of the shadow, you see, of what the Exodus was all about, of being freed from the bondage of sin. Just like the Israelites were freed from the bondage in Egypt, a person today who gives their life to Christ is freed from the bondage of sin. That is something that we experience in our own lives. And so, therefore, it is something that we can and should pass on to others, you see. Does it make sense? So that's a second important way for the message to be transmitted, is for us to tell our story as we put ourselves into the message of the Word of God. Okay? And then the third is by practicing the rituals. Okay, or the memorials. The Israelites were commanded to remember the Passover. Exodus chapter 12 and verse 14, when God was giving Moses the instructions as to what they were supposed to do to get ready to leave from bondage, he told them that this day shall be a memorial for you. for all generations. In other words, that was a feast, a meal that God had told them to eat, and all the preparations. He was very specific about how it was to be done. Okay, so an Israelite child generations later would say, why do we have unleavened bread? Why do we have unleavened bread? Well, I'll tell you why. Because we ate that meal in haste. See? God told us not to put yeast because we wouldn't have enough time to wait for it to rise. See? And so remember that as a memorial feast. And they did. See? We have today, as mentioned earlier, the memorial feast of the Lord's Supper. See? It is a memorial. It is a celebration. And those memorials, and I would suggest to you that the Exodus, the Passover, and the celebration of the communion that we celebrate in Christ are two things that are connected together. They mean the same thing. The Exodus was just a precursor, so to speak, to the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. And so in the same way that Moses commanded the people to remember that Passover meal, and Jesus told us to remember that last meal he had with his disciples. See? They are intended to transport us back to the original events, at least in our hearts and in our minds, though we did not personally experience them. So in that way, we can transmit the experience to other people. Let me real quickly, we want to try to get through this last part here. The fourth one is the purpose of the experience. Why? Why did all these things take place? What was the reason for them? The reason for the Exodus, the reason for the experience at Mount Sinai. The purpose is stated in Deuteronomy chapter 4, verses 35 and verse 39. You were shown these things, he says, so that you might know that the Lord is God. Beside him, there is no other. Verse 35. Verse 39, acknowledge and take to heart this day that the Lord is God in heaven above and on the earth below. There is no other. So why did God take the Israelites through those experiences? So that people would come to know him as God and that there is no other. The experience then is intended to be educational, not just informational. We can gain an awful lot of information by reading or being taught, but the experience solidifies our knowledge into reality. Okay? In other words, as an example, you can read all the cookbooks that you want to, but until you actually cook something, you're not a cook. Okay? You got to get your hands dirty and so forth. That was not intended for Israel to know their God as opposed to the gods of other nations, but rather it was intended that they would know God as the only God, the God of the universe. And so that was the purpose that God took them through that experience. Okay? All right, we are out of time. Next week, we will start on the next section of this. We'll be knowing God through exposure to His judgment. I want to encourage you to take some time and read Exodus 1 through 15, because that's where we will primarily be in looking at that particular section. All right, thank you all very much. Thank you.